Welcome into the Outdoor Program. I'm your host, George Grant, and I'm telling you to get out. Get out, stay out, and play all day. And I've got a couple of guests this morning. We're going to be talking about the Boone Dam Repair Project. My first guest is Sam Vinson, who's TVA's Principal Project Manager for the Boone Dam Repair. And on the other line, Kevin McMillian. He's a manager of civil construction projects for TVA, and he's currently the construction manager for the Boone Dam Project. Good morning, Sam. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, George.
Good morning, George.
All right. Who said good morning first?
This is Sam.
Ah, okay. Good. And I will assume my second good morning came from Kevin. I think that's a fairly safe assumption, right, Kevin?
Yes, sir.
I think my first question is going to go out to Sam. How far along are we on the Boone Dam repair? Could you safely say we're in the home stretch?
Sure, George. Obviously, we had several stages, grouting, rock buttresses, and then the final cutoff wall. And then that cutoff wall, we're about two-thirds of the way through it. That's the last major underground piece to the repair.
Now, I understand, Sam, that you've worked with other dam projects with TVA and with the Army Corps of Engineers. Have you worked on similar problems at other dams?
Yes, sir. Actually, I was working on as a quality assurance officer some years ago at Wolf Creek Dam, which is in Kentucky, Russell County, Kentucky, and they also did a similar cutoff wall. And then also I did the geologic mapping at Center Hill Dam, which is also an Army Corps dam where they also built a similar wall.
So this wall type and construction is fairly well known, fairly common. And I'm assuming it has a pretty good success rate.
Yes, sir. So the dams were all built pretty much in the same generation, you know, a lot in the 30s and 40s and 50s. And so much like a house that you have to maintain, sometimes remodel, the dams across the United States have gotten to a certain age where we see this type of repair becoming more common. That's correct.
Kevin, looking forward to when the project begins testing the success of the repair by fluctuating Boone's lake level, how is that going to impact all the areas that have grown up for the past 5-6 years?
Yeah, you know, the testing program will start in the spring, and currently out on the lake there. They've been working on some areas, you know, through the vegetation management program, and over this winter, you know, in preparation for restoring the lake back, we're going to have additional crews out there cutting, focused on coves to make sure that everybody has access to these coves that have public docks in them.
All right, now what about
private docks?
What about areas where there's no issue with docking? Will vegetation be left there, or will it be managed in a similar manner?
There could be some vegetation left on some of these bluffs and areas, but areas where we're expecting the most boater traffic and obviously focused on the coves, that vegetation will be cut.
Now, what happens to it once it's on the ground?
They will have crews coming around picking that up. I don't know, I haven't been involved with a lot of it, but we're going to have partnerships developed. One I know with the Boone Lake Associations, be working together to make sure all that stuff is picked up.
And what sort of problems would it present if it were not cleared up and cleared out?
Yeah, I'm not real certain. You know, one thing, if it all did float and get down to the dam, you know, to the generation folks, it could cause them problems. But right now, TVA is committed to keeping crews out there to make sure that this is cleaned up.
All righty. And, Sam, we've had some really interesting weather of late. Fairly wet summer, And has that in any way impacted progress on the project? Or, for example, we've had a regularly scheduled afternoon thunderstorm, it seems to me, for the past couple of 2 or 3 weeks. Does that end up suspending work on the cutoff wall?
So we're set up fairly well to deal with just about any type of weather. So even the concrete that we produce there on site, we can deal with freezing temperatures. We can deal with really hot temperatures. But I think you hit the key point is the one thing that really would shut us down is lightning. Obviously, with large equipment, you know, metal equipment, we have giant lightning rods everywhere, so we're very aware of the weather. We have the last 2 weeks had some lightning stand downs. The thing that we do, though, you know, we're working essentially around the clock, 724s in some cases. In some cases on Sunday, we use that for maintenance days. But what happens is that as we start to accumulate lightning shutdowns, say 2-3 hours each afternoon, they can go in and work, add shifts into the weekend when we would typically be doing maintenance. So we're actually, Kevin can correct me if I'm wrong because he's in charge on site, but we're going to pour an element today. We're going to cast concrete today on Saturday. So we work some Sundays to make up for that lightning delay, but that is the one thing that does actually get us shut down with the weather is lightning.
Kevin, can you give us a rough idea of the dimension of the pours for the cutoff wall? How much concrete's going in there? How big is the darn thing?
Yeah, George, so, you know, today on site, they're going to place two elements. One of those elements is going to be around 170 foot deep, and the other one's going to be 130 foot deep. We're running anywhere from 80 cubic yards to 120 cubic yards, just depending on the size of the depth of the element. You know, we have elements that range from 120 foot deep to 180 foot deep. We're averaging, overall, they're about 150 foot deep. They're 50 inches round. So the wall consists of 154 what we call primary elements. Those are the elements that we would put in first, and as we get two that's adjacent to each other, then we'll come in and install what we call a secondary element. That secondary element will actually cut out about two-thirds of that primary element, and that's where we get the water barrier formed from, that secondary element cutting through the primaries.
It looked like from one of the illustrations in the project update that you guys send out, it looked like there's a system to interlock the pores. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Yep. So the end product, we got to have a minimum of a 24-inch wide wall down to that design depth, depending on what area it's in. But the secondaries, you know, the way they overlap those, a lot of the times we're getting a lot thicker wall than that in most places. Yep, that's how they interlock.
All right. Now, are we fairly sure at this point that they go down far enough?
Yeah, so the contractor's got three different methods that we use to check depth, verticality, and ensure that we have that overlap at the end of the project. They also have real-time monitoring while they're drilling, so when that operator's running the drill, he knows exactly how deep he is. He knows if he's deviating to a certain direction or not. And then once they get to design depth, we tag it with a good old-fashioned tape. We lower it down there and measure it that way also.
Okay.
And then
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and then when they're done with that, there's another process that they come in, and the drill stem itself, down to the head, they have an instrument that they run down through that shaft. So that gives them another verification of alignment plus depth. And then when all the tooling comes out of the hole, they actually set another instrument on it and lower it down, and it gives them a third measurement for verticality and depth.
All right. So nobody takes the new guy on the job and says, you got to climb down there and measure this, right?
Nope.
Okay, well, that's a good thing, because I think that'll be the day I quit. Sam, we're going to need to take a break, and we will be back with you, Sam and Kevin, right after that. Welcome back into the Outdoor Program. I'm your host, George Grant, and I'm telling you to get out. Get out, stay out, and play all day. 65 degrees right now. Going to have a fine day for you to enjoy your favorite outdoor activity. We're talking this morning with Sam Vinson, who's TVA's principal project manager on the Boone Dam repair, and Kevin McMillan, who's the manager of civil construction for TVA, also working on the Boone Dam project. Sam, were there any unexpected developments as the project got underway and began to roll along?
On the mitigation of the seep, the repair of the embankment itself, I would really say nothing too exotic or strange, but realize we did this in a way where we were moving pretty quick. So as we were grouting to prepare to build this wall, we drilled over 800 locations along this dam. In a lot of cases, 2.5-foot centers on the upstream and downstream side. And that was not only to put grout in the ground, either in the soil or bedrock, different kinds of grout, but every time we did that, we gathered more information. And all that fed into hydrogeologic models, geologic models. So as we actually began to build the wall, we were pretty confident what we would see, and got good confirmation of what we were seeing as we drilled the smaller holes to put grout in. That iterative process really let us know what was down there as we got into the work.
I understand that there was originally grouting, of course, when TVA began construction back in the 1950s. What has changed since that time in terms of a more modern way to proceed with the grouting or to assess the need for grouting?
A lot. So, you know, most of the dams, as they're built, they will clean off alluvial sediment, things like that. They'll actually level the bedrock surface, take out any deficiencies in bedrock, particularly under the concrete section. And then, of course, as you said, if you have things such as karst, it's pretty common to do some type of grouting, or what they call dental concrete, where they actually fill some of the imperfections with concrete. But the difference in technology, I guess my comparison would be if you had a antique pickup truck you restored from the 1950s, and then you got in a 2020 model, you know, the differences in GPS and all of the electronics, the computer systems. So geotechnically, in the geotechnics industry, drilling's much the same way. At that time, it was a lot of feel, a lot of unseen things. You know, we're working below the ground surface where you can't see. As Kevin mentioned earlier, nearly all of our equipment and our process that's below the ground now is instrumented. So you can actually see, not with your eyes, but through instruments, what's going on with the ground surface and how it's responding. So it's very different now.
Okay. And I imagine, Sam, construction dealing with a karst substrate for dams is fairly common here in this side of the Mississippi anyway. Is that right?
Absolutely. You're spot on. The you know, the Tennessee Valley, I would tell you more than three-fourths of it lies over karst. Obviously, if you get to the west, as you get around Lake Barkley, Kentucky Lake, the Memphis area, portions of Mississippi, that's not karst quite like we have here. But everywhere from Dixon in Tennessee up into Kentucky, northern Alabama, pretty much all of eastern Tennessee until you get into the granite rocks in North Carolina, those are karst rocks. It's carbonate rock that gets dissolution, so you can have sinkholes, caves, springs, all of the karst-type features.
So there's nothing unusual about Boone having a problem at this point in its existence, right?
I wouldn't say unusual, but certainly it was something that was serious and something that you know, TVA put a lot of resources and a lot of importance on. You know, we, as I said earlier, the Corps has seen it at Wolf Creek and also at Center Hills. So not unusual, not unheard of, but certainly something that needed a response, a pretty serious response.
Now, Kevin, I understand you really like to do a little fishing on Boone Lake. Is that true?
Yes, I sure do. I like to fish everywhere I go. Grew up fishing, started very young age, and primarily a crappie fisherman.
Now, did you have a chance to fish Boone before we had to fix it?
I did not. I come up pretty late in the project. I come up for the cutoff wall itself, so by the time I got here, it was already drawn down for 3 years.
How did you find the fishing in the drawdown state?
It's been pretty good. Primarily focused on crappie. It seems like there's a good number of crappie in there. A lot of them are not of a legal length yet, but they're healthy. So that's a good sign that of the future, things to come. But it seems to have a pretty good population of crappie. You know, anytime I can find a brushier type top with 18 to 20 foot of water on it, it's full of crappie. So good sign.
Yeah, we used to have to sink Christmas trees to get a good crappie bed going, but it looks like we're going to have plenty of free trees this time around, right?
Yes, and it seems like a lot of the, at drawdown, a lot of the original trees and vegetation are at a more fishable level for crappie now than they probably would have been prior to drawdown. So it seems to have a lot of cover in there that was just left from the original flooding of the reservoir, I guess.
Now, how closely have you been able to work, Kevin, with TWRA on the ecology of the project?
Not a whole lot. I know Sam's been a lot more involved with that. I have had discussions with him, and as a fisherman, it's unfortunately, I probably won't get to be part of it because I'll be moved on to my next project. But as a fisherman here, I would be very excited for the lake. They've seen it at Lake Cumberland where Wolf Creek, where Sam mentioned the other project that they had drawn down. It's like the biologists call it a new lake effect. They've seen it in Texas also in years of drought when the lakes are down low and this vegetation gets to grow like that. And then when they reflood the lake, it proves quality of water for fishermen, and the fry has a place to survive, the plankton. It just overall, from a fisherman's standpoint, it should turn the lake around, and I would expect in 3 to 4 years the fishing at Boone will probably be as good as it was when the lake originally got flooded,
or maybe better.
I agree. From a crappie fisherman's standpoint, I'd say it'll be as good. It's probably the best it's ever been.
Now, Sam, we only have a couple of minutes left before we have to break for news. The same question to you on coordination with TWRA from the ecological standpoint of the lake. Has that been fairly easy to accomplish?
Yes, sir, and it's been routine. And it's been very focused. And maybe after the break, we can talk about some of the programs because we have a lot of them with TWRA, including fish health surveys that are really ramped up to monitor this even post refill by a few years. And I guess the short answer right now is I'd give a shout out to John Hammonds with TWRA and also Shannon O'Quinn with TVA. Because they are truly champions of fishing at Boone Lake. They spend so much time trying to improve the fishing and make it better. Those two gentlemen in particular have been huge partners with this project as far as fishing.
And, of course, Boone Lake ties in with two of the favorite trout streams in our area, the South Holston Tailwater and the Watauga Tailwater. So from that standpoint, it's of great interest to me because I like to do a little trout fishing on both of those rivers. All right. Now, Kevin, do you have any idea what your next project will be?
Not yet. I'm hoping this winter, as we get closer to finalizing a date, maybe I'll get a little heads up on that. I got my wife and youngest one up here, so they're obviously, I get asked that question a lot from them.
Yeah.
Looking forward to the next adventure anyway.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I really thank you for taking time on Saturday morning. And if you'll take a little more time, hang with me through the newscast, we'll get back into some other issues dealing with the Boone Dam project and the repair of Boone Dam. Welcome back into the Outdoor Program. I'm your host, George Grant, and I'm telling you to get out. Get out, stay out, and play all day. 65 degrees right now, going to warm up. We'll be nudging up near 90 before the day is out, but that's still a fine opportunity to enjoy all the great outdoor recreation we have in Southwest Virginia and Northeast Tennessee. And this morning, we've been talking with Sam Vincent. He's TVA's principal project manager for the Boone Dam repair, and Kevin McMillian. He's the manager for civil construction projects for TVA working on the Boone Dam repair. Sam, what sort of coordination has been available to you with TWRA in terms of the impact on outdoor recreation in the lake?
Sure, as we kind of teased before the break, TWRA's been just a valued partner. They've been fantastic through this whole process. So some of the things that we've worked with TWRA on, they helped us with installing the low-level boat ramps. Pickens and DeVault is actually, those are both TWRA land. So they did the construction there. TVA partnered with them, helped with some of the costs. And then, of course, we installed the low-level boat ramp near the new beach that we put in at the dam. So those three boat ramps obviously allowed people to have access to the lake in these lower levels, these lower elevations. They also partnered with us to plant 400 acres of native grass along the exposed shoreline. And that native grass was chosen to not only help stabilize the soil, prevent erosion, but also to be there once the lake comes up for the fish fry that Kevin mentioned, you know, the juvenile fish. We have a reef fall program with TWRA. We have put out numerous reef balls, basically these concrete balls that we construct, you know, look almost like a giant soccer ball, but with holes in them to help with the fish repopulation. And then, of course, they manage the fish program for restocking and working on plans there. And then TWRA, we're currently working with them on boater safety as the water returns. You know, so as we go through this fluctuation process next spring for verification of the wall, obviously, conditions will change every week out there, and so we're working with TWRA for some additional signage. They're going to be invited to our annual stakeholder meeting this fall, and then probably the most important thing from a scientific, also from a fish perspective, is, you know, as we lowered this reservoir, we looked around for guidance from other groups of what to do with the vegetation, what's best for the environment, what's best for the fish, and there wasn't a lot of guidance. A lot of lakes have gone through these repairs, but we didn't find a lot of guidance. So TWRA and TVA typically will perform juvenile fish studies for the health of the fishing population once every, say, 3 years. In this situation, they worked with the project, and we helped fund, and they're doing juvenile fish studies twice a year through this construction project, comparing it to the historical data that existed for the lake, and they'll continue to do those surveys post-reservoir refill for a couple of years so that we can track the trends in the fish population, types of fish, survival rates, how well they're flourishing in population. And as part of that, they're also putting into that, what did the vegetation look like? Was it mulched? Was it standing at some elevation below the water surface? What are the types of vegetation as far as bushes, trees, different things, and which types of fish responded best to that? So hopefully, if an owner of a dam goes through this in the future, they've got more data to look at as far as fish repopulation post-reservoir refill.
All right. Now, Kevin, your only experience with Boone Lake as a fisherman has been with it in the drawdown mode. Have you found any navigational problems or challenges on Boone when you climb into the boat and head out?
No. You know, out here right now, I got regular prop boat. You know, back home, I got a jet boat that in Missouri that I hadn't brought out here. But obviously, there's only so far upriver I go. But other than that, the hazards out there right now, you know, seem to be noticeable. And, you know, I've been operating a boat from a very young age. And, you know, similar to a motor vehicle on a highway, there comes responsibilities with operating a boat. Growing up on the lakes that I grew up on are real foot lakes, the lakes in Mississippi. You know, obviously, I don't know if you've been out that way. They're full of hazards, so it's something that we've always been aware of and looked out for. The days before mapping cards, you know, you get out on a new lake you've never been on before, you're idling the first several days you're there just trying to figure out where there's water and where there's not water. So the mapping cards have definitely changed a lot of it for us. But now I've been pretty easy to get around on. I ain't used to these deep lakes like this out here.
Well, yeah, up here in the mountains, we've got some pretty deep reservoirs. In fact, Boone is the shallowest of them, I do believe, maybe with the exception of Fort Patrick Henry. What kind of technique have you been able to use down here most successfully?
Over the last 10 years, I've been strictly a slow troller, spider rigger, you know, pushing poles out of the front of the boat. Here recently, due to technology changes, I've kind of went back to what I grew up with, single pole vertical jig fishing. The live scope has changed the crappie world. Like, I've never seen a sport change as much as crappie fishing has in the last 15 months due to technology. This live scope is just, you're just more efficient with one pole and putting the jig right in front of his face and actually see the fish bite the jig. So still new technology to me. I like to get out every opportunity I can to try to get more efficient with it. But that's pretty well it. I got side imaging in the 360 with a hummingbird, and I find these tops. But once I start fishing, I pretty well live scope with a single pole.
All right. And I just keep thinking to myself, if we'd had all these electronics during World War II, we might have won sooner, right?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it would have. It's kind of like archery, you know. They kept making new bows every year, and it's like, well, they can't get no better than this bow, so I'm going to get this one.
Yeah.
And then they come out with a better one next year. Electronics are the same way. You know, this hummingbirds.
Oh, yeah.
The side imaging and Mega 360 and now Garmin with the live scope. It just can't keep up with it.
I can't wait till they come up with facial recognition for fish. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Sam, what sort of impact do you think the vegetation that's left or any mulch that isn't cleared off is going to have on the ecology of the reservoir?
Sure. So we had a lot of discussion around that, and the way we landed on mulching, not cutting, at least for the majority of the reservoir, is if you're able to mulch this vegetation, and realize we mulch it just above the ground surface. So we don't actually disturb the ground. We don't dig up the root system. We need those root systems while we're dry to help hold the soil in place. But it also allows some regenerative growth. And in fact, we were quite surprised at the amount of regenerative growth from last year to this year. But that growth should provide enough structure to help the fish. But that mulched material that sits there under the air for a season or two seasons tends to start to decay, kind of stick together. And as the vegetation, the plants itself starts to have regrowth, it helps hold that mat in place. So we think we're going to limit the amount of floating debris. There will obviously be floating debris on the lake. You know, there's a lot of stuff piled up there. There's been a lot of stuff placed below the high water mark. But we're just trying to limit that. We're actually moving into a set of programs now to help start removing some of those debris fields prior to the reservoir coming up next spring. So we think the mulching is probably the best path forward. Also keep in mind that it builds a healthy ecosystem with the insects. As you flood that initially, that's also going to help the fish, help the ecology. But that's how we arrived at the mulching solution.
All right. So all that organic matter slowly breaking down won't seriously throw the parameters of dissolved oxygen or acidity or any of those things out of whack?
No, sir. And it's a volume-based solution. If it was in a smaller volume, yes, it probably could. But working with the biologists and the foresters, they felt like that this was probably the best method. And then also it keeps the floating debris down if it's mulched. You know, there are areas where we will have to cut. We can only get the skid steer in certain places. You mentioned earlier in the hour about the amount of rainfall that we've had. So some of the areas in these coves and sloughs are still a little wet to get the mechanized equipment in. And then some areas we just can't reach with the barge. You know, we're coming at this from land and from water. But hopefully as we start fluctuations, it's going to open up some access for some areas that we can't access now to get that vegetation at least out of the recreational boating zone, but hopefully leave it close to the ground surface so that it does help the fish population.
All righty. And, Sam, Kevin, we need to take another commercial break at this point. If you'll hang with me, we will have some final questions and look for some more outstanding information from you fellows right after this. Welcome back into the Outdoor Program. I'm your host, George Grant, and I'm telling you to get out. Get out, stay out, and play all day. 65 degrees right now, and we've got a temperature that's going to reach up around 90 before the day is out, but it's still a good opportunity to enjoy all the great outdoor recreation we have in Southwest Virginia and Northeast Tennessee. And Kevin loves to recreate on Boone Lake. He's an avid crappie fisherman. Now, Kevin, I understand you've even had some commercial endorsements. Is that true?
Yeah, I get a little bit of help from Hummingbird and Minn Kota. Been a very, very good partnership. You know, I've always had Hummingbird and Minn Kota on my boat. And once we started doing a little bit of tournament fishing, picked up a little bit of help from them. It's been a good opportunity.
Now, how do you conduct a crappie tournament?
You know, it's getting to be really, they're moving into the same format as a bass tournament fishermen. You know, the American Crappie Trail, we've been trying to fish those every opportunity we get. I got a brother that fish with me, and he holds them all over the country. The last one I went to was the National Championship in Sardis, Mississippi, and COVID-19's definitely changed the format a little bit, but it was a three-day tournament. Every day you could bring seven fish back to weigh in each day, so the best 21 fish won the 3 days. You can only have seven fish in your boat at any time. You know, the American Crappie Trail does a good job of making sure we take care of the resource while we're there doing these tournaments. You can only load your boat with seven fish. You can only have seven fish in your boat at any time. All fish are released back to the reservoir before we leave, and it's always a good time, and the main thing, I don't get a lot of opportunities to go like I would like to, but every time I go to one of these crappie tournaments, I learn something. I'd say anybody out there that has any interest in it, it don't matter if you think you can win or not, you need to go to these if you have the opportunity, just for the opportunities there is to be around these guys that fish every day. You learn something from them. Just being around them.
It's been my experience that if you ain't learning something new every time you fish, you shouldn't be fishing at all, right?
That's right. At that point, I guess you just need to quit fishing and do something different.
Now, Sam, I'm kind of wondering, when we start this testing, you will bring the lake back up to normal winter pool, is that right?
Yes, sir. So really a couple of steps there, but whatever we do during fluctuations this next spring, we can't go outside of the normal pre-drawdown operating guide curve. So we'll be floods notwithstanding, we'll be limited to no more than 2 feet of rays per week. There will be certain elevations that we probably want to pause and take a look at the instruments. For example, the elevation between winter and summer pool where we first noticed the muddy discharge in the sinkhole, we'll probably stop and hold it there for a little while. And really the goal is to collect the data this spring and summer coming up so that we can turn it over to just normal operation operated as run of the river as needed in 2022, which was the promise and the goal. But hopefully in that we get to summer pool even in 2021. And October 15th, we're going to have another town hall, annual town hall meeting, and we're going to lay out all the details and dates for those fluctuations next spring.
All right, and it's only going to be 2 feet in a week's time for the fluctuation, and that's both increase and drawdown?
That's correct. Again, we acts of God notwithstanding, we've had some pretty wet Februarys the last few years. So, you know, there could be a week where you get those 6-inch rainfalls, you know, in a couple of days that maybe it's actually 2.5 feet or 3 feet, but the river management folks will shoot for that 2 feet per week with obvious hold points that we'll talk about in October.
All right. Now, how long would it take for a problem to show up once you've got it up to a certain level? In other words, are you going to be able to know there's a problem right off the bat, or is it going to take several days to establish that?
So we've installed within the earthen embankment over 200 instruments. Some measure pore water pressure, some measure inclination, vibration, or movement of the earthen embankment. So we can tell pretty quick. For example, Kevin would get an alert on his phone just in changes of pore water pressure as they're doing construction. So it's an automated alert system. He can see what's going on essentially real time. People say real time, but, within minutes, we can see that. He can even see when we're drilling at certain points in the dam because it changes pore water pressure for these instruments. So it's pretty automated and it's pretty instrumented. So we can see it. We don't expect any issue, but obviously as stewards and being responsible for downstream safety and the public, we go through this process to fulfill our documentation needs. So we feel like once we have completed this repair, as we start in spring, this is really for documentation and to satisfy, the external reviews and audits that we have to go through.
All right. Open question to either one of you gentlemen. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you feel is important to mention at this point?
I'd kind of like to go first and then let Kevin chime in. I know your audience is probably more than just fishermen. I'm not an avid fisherman. I do like to hike and hunt. But one of the things that we've done as continuous improvement in this project is the rock that's being ground up to make room for this concrete to go on the ground. Instead of just taking that to a landfill or piling that up somewhere, we've actually been able to wash, screen that, and repurpose it at South Holston to rebuild hiking trails there. So we talk about Boone Dam, we talk about the community outreach, but, we've gone as far as South Holston. So the rock that was initially in the karst environment in Boone Dam is now the rock that you're walking on or hiking on some of the South Holston trails. And so we don't get to talk about things like that a lot. It's usually more technical, but we take a lot of pride in those outreach or continuous improvement efforts. And so I just wanted to mention that.
All righty. Thank you, Sam. Kevin, what about you? Anything we haven't mentioned that is going to be important here in the next little while?
The project seems to be going very well, so we don't see any issues with getting this thing done on the schedule that we've talked about here. But as information becomes available, we have a Boone Project website and then also a Twitter page at Boone Repair. And then also there's a monthly newsletter that comes out. So if anybody wants the latest information, that's the best avenues to get that. We keep that updated. As information becomes available, it goes on there instantly.
All righty. And, gentlemen, I'm going to give you an open invitation to call into this show at any time, and we'll happily be a soapbox for you so you can let people know any important aspects of the repair project and the progress that you're making. So you've got the number. Give me a call if you need about something.
George, I appreciate you having us on.
My pleasure. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Kevin. Good luck with the
Boone
Dam Repair Project.